Welcome to the Climb Your Everest podcast, a platform where we delve into the incredible stories of individuals who have triumphed over their personal challenges and are making a profound impact on the world. I'm your host, Sarah Safari, and I'm honored to be the founder of Climb Your Everest, a nonprofit organization passionately committed to offering education and empowerment opportunities to marginalized women, enabling them to unleash their true potential. In this episode, we will sit down with extraordinary individuals who have faced adversity head-on and emerged stronger, wiser, and more determined than ever. We are on a mission to bring you inspiring narratives that will uplift your spirit, ignite your passion, and motivate you to climb your own Everest. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Climb Your Everest podcast. We have an amazing guest today, my good friend, Dr. Parisa Zarringala. So welcome, Parisa. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So very recently, with an amazing group of women, we went to Nepal just kind of a couple of months ago. And we had so many great experiences that we want to share with you today. And plus learning more about her and her journey on women's empowerment and why this is a cause that she cares about. So since our podcast is, each episode is pretty short, we're just going to jump into the best part of it, which let's get to know Parisa. Parisa, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, first of all, for having me on the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure. And I've been listening to all episodes of the podcast, so I hope I can do it justice in the same way that you have. So I'm Parisa. I live in London in the United Kingdom. I was born and partly raised in Iran. So same as you, and I migrated to the UK when I was around 8 years old, went back and forth a few times and finally settled down here. I work as a clinical doctor, but also work in healthcare tech. And I've been studying, working, doing exams, doing all sorts of things along the way. And I've always really enjoyed incorporating NGO work into my life, but usually it's been in the context of medical NGO work. And so this work in Nepal was actually quite new for me, quite exciting. And I'll tell you why in sort of the rest of the podcast. I've naturally come to this position and it's been a great experience. Apart from that, I'm married, I love traveling. I'm also a yoga instructor, so I love physical activity, but also the mind and body connection. And just as most people do, seeing my friends, seeing family, and all the nice things in life.
Beautiful, thank you. One of the loveliest part of our trip in Nepal was that when we were in Chitwan, which is one of the cities that we visit, every morning Parisa would wake up and she would go do yoga in front of the river in Chitwan. And she would invite me and the rest of the women in the group to come join her. But then I felt lazy. I'm like, all day we're going to be working and doing the leadership workshop, so I'm just going to stay in my bed. But then I would see her doing yoga next to the river. So I'm like, she's doing yoga right in front of me. So I would just throw a towel and I would do yoga right behind her. It was like so peaceful watching you doing yoga in the morning. So thank you for that, like adding that positive energy into those in that trip. So I'm very thankful for that. So I kind of want to jump into the basically how your own personal experiences made you care about women's empowerment and why this becomes a passion for you in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And just before I do answer that question, before anyone thinks I'm sort of this yogic angelic being, I do, I genuinely, my body needs it. I've got a bad back, so that's probably why the commitment was there. But also Chitwan was such a beautiful, peaceful setting. It was just felt like a shame not to use it. In response to your question, I guess what I would like to do is tell a little story of where I've come from and how that's shaped my passion about women's empowerment, both personally for myself and for wider society. I was born in Iran, and as some of your listeners might know, I was born post-revolution in Iran, so I was raised in a very conservative and restricted society. I would say my family were not necessarily the most conservative, and there was elements of liberal attitude in my family, but still the culture meant that growing up as a little girl in Iran was not the same as growing up as a little boy. And this was sort of reflected in everyday life in terms of, you know, boys must play football and girls must play with dolls, which I, even as a child, I found a bit interesting. But then, you know, other elements of educational opportunities, what kind of friends you could have, and so on and so forth. And to further compound this, in my family, there was pretty much no one with even degree level higher education in my family. My mother, for example, she turned 18 when the Iran-Iraq war started and universities closed for 8 years. So she never had the opportunity to go. By the time they reopened, she had kids, it was too late. And I suppose from that perspective, I didn't have role models. My father was always very pro-education, very pro-equality between my brothers and me, so that was probably helpful. But all of these things meant that, you know, essentially for me, because I didn't want to just sit and play with dolls and do the same things that all the other girls did, I had to try to be one of the guys. And this is a common phenomenon that lots of people will relate to, you know, you have to be one of the guys to do that thing. But I guess, and I, to this day, I don't know why or how, there was a small part of me that always thought, no, this isn't it, there's got to be something else. And I was very fortunate in that my father had a job opportunity and we moved to London as a family, and I think then something in my head clicked. Even as a young girl, I was like, not everybody has this opportunity, you're extremely lucky, go and use it. Sometimes I took that thought slightly to the extreme of thinking I really had to work for it, which probably wasn't the healthiest, but I'm glad I did. And so with all this in mind, now I feel like, because of the opportunities I've had and the hard work I've put in and the fact that I was able to spend time in the UK and probably have more opportunities than I would have in Iran, I really feel that I owe it to other women, to myself, to help other people have the same opportunities or even think about these topics. I think, I guess one of the things that stands out is I was also, you know, grew up in the 90s and noughties, and it's remarkable how much things have changed in the last 10 to 20 years, you know, post hashtag Me Too. A lot is better, a lot is, you know, a lot of education is accessible online for free. And I really wish we'd had that when we were growing up. So it's great to see that that's happening parallel to the work that people like yourself are doing in women's empowerment. And I really, really want to be part of it.
Good. It was such just so amazing to have you on this trip with us. And I usually, like when I go to Nepal, you know, it's kind of a very hectic trip. There's so much happening all the time, and there are so many people that I want to be in contact with in a short amount of time that I get off and show up in Nepal, and I kind of want to do so much. And I'm very thankful this trip, because of you and the other women there, this trip became so peaceful and so amazing for me. So just every time I hear you, I hear your voice, it reminds me of, as you were sharing, I remembered all the time that you shared about this experience and what you just shared with the girls, with the women in Nepal, and how they resonate with it, how they connect with it. They also, the same as me and you, they don't have many people, or maybe not at all, people in their family who continue their education, who have any sort of degrees, higher degrees, or for them maybe even any. So it's kind of, they connected to us. And the fact that, you know, we grew up in Iran and we have that experience, I think that gives us this privilege, I want to say, to be able to connect to so many people all over the world, people who are experiencing patriarchy, people are experiencing or seen poverty. I think that's just, it is sad that this 2023, the world is experiencing and this what's happening in the world. And at the same time, I'm thankful to have experienced that. And I'm thankful you were there who had some sort of similar experiences to share with the women in Nepal. So I kind of want to jump between the conversations and go to Nepal. Yeah. So I kind of want to give us an overall picture of what were you expecting before coming to Nepal? How was it for you? What was the highlight? What would have you done differently if you knew certain things? How was your experience with the women? And I know I'm asking 10 questions in one question, but you can answer any of those that you want.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to, I guess, give the listeners some background, I had traveled once before to Nepal to do some hiking. Yeah. And with regards to doing NGO work, I had done medical NGO work, and that's very different because, especially in developing societies, you know, there's still very much sort of doctor knows best, and your position slightly differs to the experience I had with this NGO work, and I'll explain why. I had only met you on Zoom a couple of times, and I'd met the other girls on Zoom once. So going in, I was excited, I was nervous. You know, you just don't know how things are going to go when you all meet in person and you're traveling and, you know, kind of straight in the deep end, I suppose. And with regards to the workshops, I think one of the reasons I really wanted to come out was to see the interactions and how it plays out in practice, but also, I hope you don't mind me saying, but see what the kind of outcomes and benefits of this work is. And because I was really looking for something that I could be involved with in the long term. And I'm very passionate about women's empowerment. I love the country Nepal. So I thought, okay, this makes sense. Let's go and check it out. So we got there, and the next morning I met you and I met Hollister, who's a lovely lady also from the States, who'll be interviewed further on. And it was so easy. And without sounding cheesy, I mean, we shared a 5-hour car journey straight after, I think, breakfast. And we were chatting. When we needed quiet time, we could just shut our eyes, and it just felt so easy. And I guess I immediately had this instinct that this was going to be nice. And then we started off with the workshop in Chitwan, which was new to Sarah, yourself as well. And we go in day one, and about 50% of the cohort were men, and quite a few of them were older. We thought, okay, right, this is going to have to change slightly. Especially I was doing things like sexual health, and I thought, okay, well, I need to make sure the content is still appropriate. Not changing it massively, but culturally sensitive, so on and so forth. And we pretty much all changed our talks.
About so an hour. Like kind of, I want to explain for people who maybe not heard any other the episodes, and this is the first episode that they are listening to. We go to Nepal every 6 months and we do leadership workshops for women. So usually most of the participants are women. So when Dr. Parisa is saying half of the participants were men, that was a shock because that never happened before. And the other one is that I kind of want to explain is that some of these topics are being covered online. So we talk about a lot of different topics, all the way from communication skills and self-confidence and sexual health, all the way to, you know, mental health and self-motivation, goal setting. Like, we cover a lot of different leadership skills for women to be able to find better jobs. So kind of these are the topics we pick, the best ones, the one that the women like the most and they want to hear them in person. I pick those, and I kind of ask some of the volunteers, like Dr. Parisa, to present those. And so basically that's how it goes. And Usually most of the participants are women, but this time we were shocked that half of the participants were men. So that's what she's referring to.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for the context. So we get there and, the first day, it was a very formal environment. Very few women spoke. Everyone was very engaged in the talks, but couldn't quite figure out how much women were benefiting. And as time went by, and admittedly, we were sort of putting the finger on some of the girls and the women to engage, to get up, to speak, and kind of got them warmed up. By day two, some of the comments and discussions that were opened up, for example, there was a discussion about menstruation, there was another discussion about consent, there was discussions about lots of different things. I'm just remembering the ones that I covered for now. And I was absolutely amazed. I would say probably in a small town doing this sort of thing for the first time, the people who spoke about those topics would have to be quite brave, plain brave. And, there were some awkward faces around the room, but there was that willingness to learn and to open up those conversations. And I was really, really impressed by that. I kept just imagining if I went back home to a small town or village and opened up these conversations, what would it be like? That was my mindset going in. But I was impressed. And a lot of the people that we taught were teachers. So obviously they're educated, they're educating people. Perhaps they're more open to learning new things. But I was genuinely really, really impressed. And we had to actively encourage the women to engage. So for example, there was a female principal of a school who was actually already doing work in her community. She was getting women who never left the house to just leave the house for whatever reason, just get out the house. And I think she was doing some really impactful work. But she, when we made her talk, she came and said, "Thank you. I've never spoken to men I've never spoken in front of men like that before." And I was sort of not surprised, but it was amazing that, that was happening at this day and age. And then as we went to future workshops in Bhaktapur, which is a town near Kathmandu, and Kathmandu, the caliber changed, and every day the workshops changed there. The women were a lot more sort of aware of leadership skills and had a little bit of exposure or background. There were more women present in the workshops. So every day things kept changing. But I would honestly say the one thing that really amazed me and sort of got me, I suppose, was Sarah invited along with us two young Nepali women on the trip who had been part of her organization and another organization before that. They were 18 and 19, and I was told they were shy, but when we met them, they were confident. They were absolutely delightful. They were standing in front of the audience, translating for us when it was needed. And they were encouraging the other girls to take part in the workshop, so I could see them encouraging their teammates. And I suppose that for me was, okay, this is what we can achieve through this workshop, because from what I understand, their circumstances were very different 10 years before without sort of exposing any personal information. And that was the nugget for me. And I thought, okay, this is why we're doing this. This is a long-term play. It's not immediately, you get that satisfaction. They say thank you, they look happy, but it's the long-term change. So that's a very long-winded answer to your question, but it was incredible. And I would love beautiful. To do it again and again and again.
That's great. Thank you. As you were sharing the stories, I was watching us doing everything. And I watched us how we were shocked the first day and we're trying to change all the slides to accommodate the audience. And how fruitful it was the second day, because we could get their trust and they started, everything started working even better. And I think as educators, most of the participants were principals of the school, which they have access to 1,000, 2,000 students and 20, 30, 40 teachers. So I think that's kind of a great step for Chitwan, where we had so many principals in that event with us. And I'm very thankful for that. And it was my first time doing a workshop in Chitwan. I was also a little bit out of place and are trying to make sure everything works out so well so that I can come back. And I'm very thankful that you, Hollister, you were there to support me and, you know, to help me to do the whole workshop. So I'm always thankful. So since you want to wrap up, I kind of want to ask you, and there is so much more that we can talk. We can sit here and talk for hours. And I want to bring you back to the next season of the podcast. So I'm asking the audience, any questions you have from Dr. Parisa, please put it in the bottom of the link, and where I'm going to be posting this everywhere, all my social media, YouTube everywhere, and Spotify, Apple, everywhere. So please write down your questions. I'm going to be collecting all the questions. So next time I'm inviting her, I'm going to be asking your questions, and we're going to continue this conversation. I'm so happy that you're part of my organization, the Climb Your Everest organization. And to wrap up, I want to ask you, what is the last thing you want to say to the audience? Maybe one message, one thing you want to end this conversation with?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of have been actually thinking about that for the last couple of weeks since we agreed to do this. And I think one thing that I've experienced, I'm a surgeon, and surgery is a very almost old-fashioned discipline. It's very, very male-dominated. And climbing up the career ladder, I had plenty of amazing, lovely male mentors, but I always craved a female role model to not to sort of put them on a pedestal, but just to see how it works with that perspective. And what I experienced was not what I wanted. There were lots of women who did reach sort of senior consultant positions, but they'd had to jump through so many hoops that when I was meeting them, they had that kind of slightly boisterous, you know, hardcore, if I may say, personality and approach to training. And I felt sometimes judged by them. And I always used to think, well, I don't want to be like that. I want to be womanly. I want to get there and not lose myself in that. And I think the thing I really learned and I advocate for is be true to yourself and be true to your experiences. And if you have seen lots of hardship as a woman, share that with the women who come in after you, and don't let it dictate your personality, but be open about it and you know, normalize it, in a sense that, you know, I've been through this, I don't want you to go through this, and I'm going to do everything about it. But if you've experienced some of these things, you're not alone. I don't mean normalizing it in the sense of saying it's okay. And I really think being true to yourself and lifting other women as you climb is the most important thing.
That's beautiful. That's very good. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Parisa. Thank you for being here. I feel so lucky that we found each other from side of the world, even though we were born in the same country, but we are living in two different continents. But I feel so lucky. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of the trip. Thank you for being part of the organization. And I'm so, so looking forward to work with you, be friends with you, and go to Nepal with you again.
I can't wait. Thank you. Thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity to join you in Nepal.
Thank you. At Climb Your Everest, our mission is to provide access to education and resources to marginalized women so that they can gain the skills and knowledge they need to succeed in their lives and communities. But we can't do it without your help. 100% of your donation is tax deductible and will go directly towards funding our programs, including scholarships, educational material, and mentorship. So please visit our website, climbyoureverest.org, and make a donation today. Every little bit helps. It costs $25 to sponsor one girl to participate in empowerment workshops for a month. If you're interested, please contact me at sara@climbyoureverest.org. And together, we can empower marginalized women to climb their own personal Everest. Thank you for your support.